incident last February. Recently, he has also been attacked by opposition politicians and members of non-governmental organizations over the handling of the sinking of a trawler carrying as many as 750 migrants in the Mediterranean, in which hundreds of people are believed to have drowned.
Right or left, whoever wins, it makes no difference for the Greek people. It must be clear that Greece's present and future are in the hands of the European Commission.
Mitsotakis has so far pushed forward a large privatization program, which has included the sale of public assets and crucial infrastructures, and cut spending policies on public services, which have resulted in a further welfare retrenchment.
The biggest problem of Greece is the economical problem. The country needs new jobs, a lot of new jobs.
Also this time, the participation rate in Greece's elections only reached 60%, one of the lowest levels ever recorded in the country since it became a republic in 1974.
Mitsotakis will soon be given an exploratory mandate to form a government by Greek President Katerina Sakellaropoulou. After years of financial crisis, Mitsotakis' biggest challenge will be turning Greece into a real player in the European Union, without leaving too many Greeks behind. Max Civili, Athens.
In the limelight.
British government's move to table a bill in the parliament that intends to ban local public bodies from joining the popular boycott campaign against the Israeli regime threatens to erode democratic values, restrict freedom of expression, and undermine campaigns for social justice. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote in this regard, if proof were needed that Britain continually throws Palestinians under the bus, it came hot on the heels of the UK-Israel bilateral relations roadmap, when the pro-Israel Secretary of State for Leveling Up, Michael Gove, tabled last week the Economic Activity of Public Bodies, Overseas Matters Bill banning Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, BDS. In passing this law, Britain is once again standing against Palestinians by planning to take away one more peaceful tool to demand their rights to freedom, justice, and equality. In May 2022, the late Queen Elizabeth II announced in her Queen's Speech, the annual opening of the British Parliament, that her government would pass legislation barring public bodies from participating in boycotts, as they would undermine community cohesion. There were no further details given at the time, but it was ultimately not put forward as planned under her reign. However, the government finally introduced the anti-boycott bill on June 19th, with a second reading planned for early July. The bill was always designed to ban public bodies, including local authorities, pension funds, and universities, from exercising the right to implement ethical investment policies if the targets were not seen as in line with UK foreign policy. While supporters of Palestine were convinced that the government wanted to attack the BDS movement specifically, it was only when the actual text of the bill became public that it became clear how brazen the government is in siding with the Zionist regime. The bill included a paragraph that names the Zionist regime as a regime that cannot be boycotted. No other regime was singled out for protection. The stated aim of the bill is to make a provision to prevent public bodies from being influenced by political or moral disapproval of foreign states when taking certain economic decisions subject to certain exceptions and for connected purposes. The government would therefore be interfering in decisions made by public bodies based on its own investment and procurement needs if they are not in line with British foreign policy. However, there was no level playing field in this application. The Zionist regime was made an exception, as detailed in Section 3, Subsection 7, including regulations under subsection may not specify, and regulations under subsection may not result in a description of decision or consideration relating specifically or mainly to Israel, the occupied Palestinian territories, or the occupied Golan Heights. By making an exception in the bill for Israel and the Palestinian territories it occupies, the UK is tacitly equating the territories inside and outside the Green Line as being one area that cannot be boycotted. In this, it is equating Tel Aviv, the Male Adumim settlement in the West Bank, and the settlements in the Golan Heights, which the Zionist regime annexed in 1981 and which former US President Donald Trump recognized as part of the fabricated regime of Israel. The US was wrong, but shamefully honest when it claimed through its then Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, that the Zionist regime was not illegally occupying any significant amount of Palestinian land. However, through this bill, Britain is effectively erasing the occupation through the back door by treating the fabricated regime of Israel, the occupied Palestinian territories and Golan Heights as one entity. Contradicting its own position, the bill's press release claims it will also not change the UK's approach to the Middle East peace process or our position on settlements which are illegal under international law. The audacity of this policy shift recalls the UK's disastrous Balfour Declaration, which even Boris Johnson, during his tenure as Mayor of London, described as tragically incoherent and an exquisite piece of Foreign Office fogderma. The bill effectively removes the green line separating Israel from its illegally occupied territories, including the West Bank, East Al-Quds, and the Golan Heights, and treating the entire land between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea as the fabricated regime of Israel. If this, together with the bilateral roadmap, is seen as part of the benefit of Britain leaving the EU through Brexit and making its own way in the world, then it does not augur well for its trajectory when it comes to it upholding international law. In its statement offering the reasons for the bill, the British government directly conflates pro-Palestine activism with anti-Semitism, claiming these campaigns not only undermine UK's foreign policy but lead to appalling anti-Semitic rhetoric and abuse. Yet, it provides no evidence for this and offers the Palestinians no other alternative, peaceful means of attaining their legitimate rights. The statement provides a quote by the pro-Israel group, the Board of Deputies of British Jews, and confirms support by another, the Jewish Leadership Council. Neither of the organizations questioned the bill's inclusion of the illegally occupied Palestinian territories or the Golan Heights, because they clearly do not distinguish between them. The British government's lack of engagement with dissenting Jewish groups in the UK is stark, but even more so is its failure to consult Israelis with a different view on the issue. Take, for example, the 14 groups that have since called on the Tory government to withdraw the bill. Still more blatant is the absence of any discussion with the Palestinian or Syrian communities in the UK. This once again confirms that the UK backs the fabricated regime of Israel, no matter what it does. Apart from occasionally calling for investigations when it murders civilians, including children, but holds no stick to beat the Zionist regime with. The tabling of the bill coincided with the deadly events in Jenin, in which the Zionist regime murdered 5 Palestinians, including a 15-year-old girl, amply demonstrating why the peaceful BDS movement is necessary to isolate the Israeli regime until it adheres to international law and ends its occupation, allows the return of refugees, and treats its citizens equally. Those demands are legal and ethical and anything but anti-Semitic. The bill further exposes the extent of Britain's hypocrisy, given its stance against Russia and the range of sanctions it imposed on the country. Despite the Zionist regime's 56-year occupation and numerous reports exposing its apartheid policies, the UK regime has not imposed a single sanction on the Israeli regime. While the bill is designed to shield the Zionist regime, it will impact other causes, including climate justice, leading a broad coalition of more 60 civil society organizations supporting the right to boycott to come together to oppose and campaign against it.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
The recent extreme violence in the occupied West Bank risks spiraling out of control, according to the United Nations human rights chief, who condemned Israel's use of deadly force in a raid in the Jenin refugee camp that killed at least several Palestinians, including children, while warning that the situation was deteriorating sharply due to the use of heavy weaponry, urging Israel to stop the violence. The UN official called on the Zionist regime to abide by international law, stressing that the current situation serves only to drive Israelis and Palestinians deeper into an abyss. The problem is this sort of atrocities on the Jenin camp has happened in the past as well. In 2002, 52 Palestinians were killed in a large-scale military incursion on the same camp. That event became a turning point, marking the Jenin refugee camp as a symbol of resistance for Palestinians. The place is therefore a concern for the Zionist regime, which has been reportedly expanding its military raids in the occupied territory in recent months under one of its most extremist governments yet. In the wake of the recent Israeli military raids into the city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank and subsequent responses by Palestinian youth, officials from various Palestinian factions have gathered in Tehran in the last few days to assess the current situation in occupied Palestine and to establish a unified stance in their efforts to bring an end to the Israeli occupation. For a closer look at the recent development and an analysis, please join us on this edition of Iran Today. The leaders of several Palestinian resistance groups fighting against the Zionist regime came to Tehran during the last few days, while tensions were simmering in the West Bank. Ziad al-Nakhaleh, the leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, arrived in Iran along with several other senior members and leaders of Palestinian militant groups last week, culminating in the arrival of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran a few days later. We had a chance to have an interview with Mr. Qudoumi, the representative of Hamas in Iran. He shared some points about the recent developments in the occupied West Bank.
The main result that we're more closer today. We have come to common understanding more and more over the last 10 years of what is happening in the region. So today we are closer to the other Palestinian factions. We are closer to the Iranian government. We are closer to brothers in Hezbollah in the southern Lebanon. We have crystallized our front for confrontation the enemy. This is the major outcome of this visit. We have decided on the need of the resistance, how to proceed further.
The active movement of Palestinian resistance leaders in Tehran during the past couple of weeks is indicative of the fact that Iran has not taken a single step back from the cause of the freedom of the Palestinian people. Moreover, it shows that the trust of these leaders in Iran to support their cause has not decreased, but in fact, it has increased. They have well understood that it is the Islamic Republic that is still loyal to the goals of the Palestinian nation without retreating an inch from it. This is while others have changed their positions under different sets of circumstances. And also the fact that these resistance leaders believe in Iran's deterrence power and its ability to provide security at the highest level. Mr. Abu Sharif is the representative of Islamic Jihad resistance movement in Iran. We visited him in his office.
The ties between the Islamic Republic of Iran and various resistance groups and movements are very strong. It is Iran that is supporting them, in particular the Palestinian resistance. On the other hand, the situation of relations with the Palestinians in Iran is increasing day by day. Today, everybody acknowledges that no party can support the Palestinian people, especially in its resistance, except Iran. This matter has been acknowledged by almost all Palestinians.
Since first establishing ties with Hamas and the Islamic Jihad in the 1980s, Iran has openly backed the Palestinian factions. The groups regularly send leaders or delegations to Iran. Mr. Rui Varon accepted us in his office and shared his thoughts on the bond between Iran and the Palestinian resistance movement.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the conditions in the region have changed and actually led to the rule of nations. Inside Palestine, today there is a resistance in Gaza and the West Bank, which has involved the Zionist regime in an attrition warfare. Now in Gaza, they say, if you strike, I will strike too. But in the past, it was only Israel that used to strike. In Lebanon, the 2006 war created a kind of deterrence that Israel has not dared to attack Lebanon in the last 17 years.
According to local media reports, al-Nakhaleh hailed Iran's unwavering support for Palestinians during his recent visit, saying that no other country in the world takes such a stance so explicitly. PIJ Secretary General pointed to the meeting in Tehran between senior members of Hamas, PIJ, and several senior Iranian officials, including the leader of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khamenei, as a testament to Tehran's support for the Palestinian resistance factions. That also underscored the unity of the resistance alliance against the Israeli regime that will yield positive outcomes for the region. One of the well-known figures supporting and fighting for the Palestinian cause is General Qasem Soleimani. How do you assess his role and the legacy that was left behind him?
Well, when you mention Palestinian resistance and the advancement of Palestinian resistance, you cannot miss Sayyid Qasem Soleimani, rahmatullah alayh. He was the real brother for us in Palestine, and he was the real soldier to be with his friends and brothers in the field, though maybe not physically was existed in Palestine, but with his experience, with his support, with his opinion, he was always over there. He participated in the shifting of the expertise. He participated in exchanging of the opinion. As I said, not only in military field, but also in political field, the opinion how to proceed further. Then he was also the mastermind of how to convey the needed equipments, the needed support for the resistance inside Palestine.
Haj Qasem Soleimani is one of the big examples. I mean, a great and unique personality. He worked seriously. He was the man of the field in our region, tried to execute the project of the Islamic Revolution, which was and still is the project of all the Islamic Ummah and our project in Palestine. We are one Ummah and we have huge capabilities in human power, economy and geographic location. This Ummah must rise up and confront all the usurpers and aggressors in the region. Haj Qasem was the engineer of the relations among regional resistance movements.
In the regional context, Iranian officials are urging Muslim countries, especially those have normalized relations with Israel or are in the process of doing so, to halt the process and instead join humanitarian support efforts for the Palestinians. They remind the Islamic Ummah that the credibility and strength of Palestinian resistance groups is increasing day by day, as witnessed by the Zionist regime's recent defeat in the five-day war in the occupied West Bank.
The situation in Palestine is good nowadays. We saw its manifestations in the Battle of the Revenge of the Free Ones in Gaza Strip. And currently, the West Bank is doing a great job. There are hundreds of fighters, while various battalions have been formed in different locations of the West Bank. The Islamic Jihad movement played a great role in forming these battalions. The field situation in general is satisfactory and consumes much of the Zionist entity's energy, as it has to deploy more than 60,000 officers and soldiers in the West Bank. There has been a remarkable development in the ties between different factions of the resistance in the region.
The leader of Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khamenei, hosted leaders of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad in Tehran recently to congratulate them on their conduct during last month's conflict with Israel. The leader said that recent developments in Jenin, where Palestinian youth surrounded the Israeli military, serve as clear examples of a new era and signal a bright future with complete victory, promising that the West Bank is where the Zionist regime will be brought to its knees. Mr. Shakibayi from the Society for the Defense of Palestinian Nation gave us more information about the history of Palestinian cause in his office.
Before the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini always warned in his speeches about the issue of the Zionist regime and helping the Palestinians. After the revolution, the issue of Palestine has played a key role in our foreign policy because we had formed an Islamic government and this government could not be indifferent to the issues of the world of Islam. In order to implement his strategy in support of the Palestinian nation, the Imam thought of forming the Quds Force.
The Quds Force is not supposed to take up arms and fight with the Zionist regime in person. Imam Khomeini's goal was that the Palestinian youth would be trained and able to take up arms and defend their rights. Imam Khomeini believed that Palestine will not be freed unless the Palestinian people themselves want it and enter the scene of struggle.
Ayatollah Khamenei emphasized the sense of responsibility of the young and faithful Palestinians and their individual and collective presence on the battlefields as a very important issue. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad did well in the test of the recent Battle of Gaza, and now the conditions for the Zionist regime have changed compared to 7 years ago, and the Zionist leaders have the right to worry about not seeing the regime's 80th year.
In West Bank, the people have seen the model of the so-called peace process. Israel gave us nothing. So today, even away from the yardsticks of the political affiliation and the political movements, the common man in the street is in the street today and raising the slogan of resistance and marching to fight against the Israelis. Today, our youngsters in West Bank and Jenin and Nablus and Qalqilia, in all cities, they are in the field to the level that today, after 20 years, Israel in the ground felt not safe, and they wanted to start the air raids, and they started with their own gunships.
Accordingly, geopolitical experts confirm that the current conditions and the progress of the resistance front are unprecedented in the history of the occupation of Palestine. They consider the international atmosphere to be in the interest of the Palestinian people, despite all the existing pressures from some Western governments.
The first thing that happened was the First Intifada in 1987. When the people saw that Palestine Liberation Organization was exiled, they moved the decision-making center from outside their borders to inside, and people came onto the scene. This was actually the exact interpretation of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in Palestine. Along with the Kuwait War, the First Intifada was stopped. The U.S. Secretary of State of the time made promises, and the Madrid Conference of 1991 began. It was hoped that Palestine could be liberated through dialogue. After that, Oslo was signed, which was supposed to form a Palestinian state within 5 years. But no result was achieved. Israel even built settlements. Finally, in 2000, Clinton announced the failure of negotiations, and this caused the Second Intifada to begin. And people realized that it was wrong to trust the talks.
The Hamas chief, Ismail Haniyeh, described to local media in Tehran that the Palestinian youth's embracing of struggle and jihad and the formation of voluntary armed resistance units in the West Bank as the most important development that has taken place in occupied Palestine. Gaza is the heart of the resistance, but today the main and decisive battle is taking place in the West Bank. The Zionist enemy is making some dangerous decisions, but because of the upper hand that our young fighters have in the West Bank, the Zionist regime has no other choice but to choose between bad and worse options, he stated.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Welcome to the news section of the program, where I have selected news excerpts from a couple of news websites, starting with Tehran Times. Resistance best option to spell end of Palestine occupation, Iran's new security chief. The comments were made by Ali Akbar Ahmadiyan at a meeting with Ismail Haniyeh, the head of the Hamas political bureau, on Monday in Tehran. Ahmadiyan said that the resistance involvement in the Saif al-Quds battle was a significant turning point that led to tactical success for the resistance movement. Haniyeh, for his part, recognized Iran's outstanding contribution to fostering cooperation among Muslim countries and resistance groups. He gave the Iranian official an update on the situation in Palestine and the strategies of the resistance movements for retaining control over the Zionist regime. Al Jazeera reads, Israeli forces kill Palestinian teen after checkpoint shooting. A Palestinian teenager was left bleeding to death after a shooting attack at Qalandia military checkpoint in the occupied West Bank, according to Palestinian news agency Wafa. Ishaq Hamid Ajlouni, 17, was shot and killed by Israeli forces after he opened fire at the checkpoint on Saturday, lightly wounding a security guard, the agency said. Violence has engulfed the West Bank this past week since Israeli forces stormed the Jenin refugee camp to arrest two suspects on Monday. France 24 says Palestinian killed as Israeli settlers torch homes, cars to avenge deadly shooting. Hundreds of Israeli settlers stormed into Palestinian town in the occupied West Bank on Wednesday, setting fire to dozens of cars and homes to avenge the deaths of four Israelis killed by a pair of Palestinian gunmen the previous day, residents said. Palestinians said one man was killed in the violence. The settler attack came as the Israeli military deployed additional forces across the occupied West Bank and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced plans to build 1,000 new settler homes in response to the deadly shooting. According to Financial Tribune, backing for Palestinian resistance reaffirmed. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, reaffirmed the Islamic Republic's backing for Palestinian resistance groups in their campaigns against the Israeli regime. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks in a meeting with Ziyad al-Nakhale, leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and his accompanying delegation in Tehran. Pointing to the achievements of the resistance groups in the recent conflicts with the Israeli forces, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The Zionist enemy is today on the defensive, and such a situation indicates that the resistance groups have correctly identified the path and are prudently moving ahead in the right direction." This brings us to the end of this section. It's time to get back to our main narrative. Please stay tuned. Iran describes Israel as the root cause of the region's instability and insecurity, but also stresses Israel's U.S.-supported barbarity will not change the inevitable fate of the Tel Aviv regime.
The history of Palestinian struggles since the past 75 years, that is the beginning of the occupation, is divided into two periods. One period is before the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, which caused changes in regional and international relations. And one period is after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The Palestinians had lost three things: land, identity, and government. In the first period, before the Islamic Revolution, none of them could be recaptured, and even their leaders were all exiled to other countries. But after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the situation changed completely.
Tehran says the history of the apartheid regime in occupied territories is full of assassinations, massacre, torture and killing of Palestinian kids, and described Tel Aviv regime's atrocities and massacre of Palestinian women and children as indications of the destitute of Zionists. Iranian officials say that the Israeli regime has been struggling for more than 70 years to exit its identity crisis, which has been mixed with genocide, plunder, forced displacement, and scores of other inhumane moves. Reportedly, the Zionist regime has become even more violent since Benjamin Netanyahu came back to power last year as the leader of an extremist coalition cabinet, to the point that the ongoing violence has prompted international calls for calm, with even the European Union urging an immediate ceasefire.
Months ago, Ayatollah Khamenei said that the internal crises within the Israeli regime have accelerated the collapse of the Zionists to happen even before the 25-year deadline previously declared by him. He pointed out that during the regime's 75 years of existence, it has never faced problems like the dire ones it is facing today.
When Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, has emerged victorious with his brothers and sisters in this Islamic revolution, the youngsters in Palestine, they raised the photo of Imam Khomeini in the streets. In Lebanon, in Palestine, and everywhere where Palestinians are there, they felt there is a new comrade, a new brother, and in the name of Iran, in the name of Imam Khomeini, has emerged to be a real supportive, rather I would say, to share with them their struggle for the freedom of Palestine and for the confrontation of this enemy, the Israeli enemy.
Accordingly, geopolitical experts consider the warnings coming out of the Zionist establishment, even by prominent Israeli officials, regarding the nearing collapse of the Zionist regime as another sign of the weakening.
Israeli media is reporting that recently a significant number of people are looking for an escape route from the occupied territories amid deepening political and existential crisis facing the Israeli regime led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Meanwhile, recent attempts in diplomacy to get closer to Iran has shown itself in different formats. For instance, the removal of the clauses related to Iran from the statement of the Jeddah Arab League summit has been interpreted by international observers as an indication that some influential Arab countries have realized the importance of living peacefully with Iran. In light of that, today all the Persian Gulf littoral states, including Saudi Arabia, have restored or plan to restore full diplomatic relations with Iran. Even Manama reportedly held bilateral talks with Iran in recent months.
Certainly, the reduction of tension in the region will help the resistance movement to consume less energy in confronting the Zionist entity. Up to now, we do not think that Saudi Arabia might get involved in the project confronting the Zionist, but we are so confident that it won't go for a direct normalization prior to solving the Palestinian cause. The reduction of tensions will reflect upon all over the region. Currently, the Yemen's case is in a state of resolution and dialogue, and God willing, all other cases will be solved.
The reconciliation with Saudi Arabia happened as the kingdom changed the course of its foreign policy in favor of diplomacy instead of confrontation. With a focus on economic development, Saudi Arabia and its allied neighbor, the United Arab Emirates, have in recent times moved to mend fences with most of their regional adversaries. Riyadh has walked back from a hawkish foreign policy it had adopted when Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman entered the picture after his father, King Salman, took the throne in 2015. It has reconciled with Turkey, re-engaged with Syria, and supported a ceasefire in Yemen. But it had left the most difficult of the cases, and perhaps the most important of all, till the end. It surprised the world a few weeks ago when it announced a deal to normalize ties with Iran after years of talks that appear to have borne no fruit.
The recent meeting between the leaders of the resistance and Ayatollah Khamenei is important from two perspectives. The first aspect is the main principles of the foreign policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran from the beginning until now. This meeting proved that the position of the Islamic Republic of Iran has not changed since the beginning of 1979. The message is clear. Some thought that after the agreement between Iran and Saudi Arabia, the situation would change and Iran would fail to support the cause of Palestine. But this message was clear that the Islamic Republic of Iran will not fail to address the Palestinian issue under any circumstances.
But how could an accord between Riyadh and Tehran, which would certainly stymie regional polarization and normalization with Israel, help the Palestinian cause?
I think the Iran-Saudi deal is a big win for Iran and a big defeat for America. Today, Saudi Arabia does not respond positively to many of America's demands. In the last 3 months,
The U.S. Secretary of State has visited Saudi Arabia twice. In a recent trip, he officially requested in a press conference that Saudi Arabia should compromise with Israel to solve the problems of the region. The Saudi foreign minister immediately replied that the problem will not be solved by compromise between Saudi Arabia and Israel, but by recognizing the Palestinians' right to self-determination. This answer of the Saudi foreign minister is unprecedented in the history of Saudi Arabia's recent 50-year diplomacy. This achievement has been made under the shadow of the agreement with Iran and the new conditions of the region.
According to experts, the China-brokered Saudi-Iran accord is a clear sign that Riyadh and its allies are acting more independently of their long-standing partnership with Washington. And this current period of multipolarity and middle power assertiveness could be beneficial for Palestinians. U.S. hegemony in the Middle East has clearly not served Palestinian interests well, and a shakeup in the regional order could provide new opportunities.
This brings us to the end of this edition. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
فدعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you so much for joining us. Today, here we are with Brother Fawad Haider, and I'm really happy to say hello to him. Fawad, salam. How are you?
Salam, sir. I'm fine. How about you?
Alhamdulillah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us today. Inshallah, today we will talk about Ayah 27 and 28, the Ayatain, the two verses in Surah An-Nisa on page
83.
Brothers and sisters, turn to page 83, Ayah 27 and 28 of Surah An-Nisa. Let's everybody once listen to the recitation, then inshallah we'll get back to our class.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wallahu yuridu an yatuba alaykum wa yuridu alladhina yattabi'una ash-shahawati an tamilu maylan 'azima. يريد الله أن يخفف عنكم وخلق الإنسان ضعيفا.
Great recitation, nice one. Alhamdulillah, mashallah. We will practice the recitation as well. Yes, Fawad?
Yes.
Right at the very end of our class. But before that, we must mention some important points about this ayah.
Let's see. Explanations.
Yeah. Because meaning, when we understand what Allah Almighty says, it can affect our recitation as well.
Yes.
Sometimes you don't know what it means, okay? Just read it. You just say it's a text. I read it. Arabic text. But when you understand it, you wholeheartedly understand it. So you recite it
with a tone that sets the, that matches.
That shows you know it.
Yeah.
That shows you understand it. That gives you good feeling. That gives you good recitation, good vocal sound. Yeah.
So also the tone changes and matches with the verse.
Yeah, of course.
To make it more beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Because you feel it. Yeah. So let's say what Allah Almighty says in these two verses. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Allah Almighty says in Ayah 27 of Surah An-Nisa, والله يريد أن يتوب عليكم ويريد الذين يتبعون الشهوات أن تميلوا ميلا عظيما. Allah Almighty desires to turn towards you clemently. Okay, it means Allah Almighty wants to accept your tawbah. يَتُوبُ عَلَيْكُمْ Allah Almighty turns towards us. What does it mean? It means He turns, Allah Almighty changes His mind because He's merciful. So He changes His mind not to punish you because of your mistakes, to forgive you. But we learned about the conditions, yes? In the previous verses, ayah, on ayah 13 and 14.
Yes.
Yeah, about tawbah, we explained it. Then, so Allah Almighty desires this. Now, those who are not good believers, those who are not believers in Allah Almighty, those who are like following their own desires, their evil desires, what do they wish for us? What do they desire for us? Look. But those who pursue their base appetites, desire, or evil desires, okay, they wish what? That you fall into gross, waywardness, okay? Like you fall into mistakes, into like guna, into sins, okay? So, like those who really are not believers, they of course they, hi, come on, it's just a party, let's go. Forget it, okay? It's just once, okay? So, God forbid, like maybe some kinds, our friends even take us to, like what? To a very bad way. In the day of judgment, when a person sees himself like facing trouble, okay? He is having problem. He can't enter Jannah. He must go to the hellfire. What does he say? Oh, ya laytani. So he says that, oh, I wish lam attakhidh fulanan khalila. I wish I hadn't chosen that person as my friend. Why? Because he took me to that. He has done something to me that now I have to go to the hellfire. Got it? So our friends, sometimes they are very important, okay? They play an important role in our life. For what? We should be very careful, okay? To choose friends who are believers, who are mu'min, who are pious friends, okay? Good friends, not bad friends. So they usually want us, desire bad things for us. In fact, and apparently they look good, but in reality they are not, right? So, in the next ayah, Allah Almighty says, يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ أَن يُخَفِّفَ عَنْكُمْ Allah desires to lighten your burden, your punishment, okay? وَخُلِقَ الْإِنسَانُ ضَعِيفًا For man, because man was created weak. Insan is created very weak. So a little punishment comes to him, oh, جَزَعٌ وَفَزَعٌ There are a lot of, like, you see, you hear a lot of, like, cries, oh, God, this is difficult for me, I can't bear this kind of punishment, please. Allah Almighty will say, hey, when I told you, like, stop committing sins, you did not listen to him now, like, test it. Yeah. So, very beautiful points, but there are a lot of points still, okay, left that you can refer to the Tafasir books, interpretations, inshallah, and learn them there.
Qur'ani fi qalbi dawman yaghmuruni min faydi dhiya ayatul
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
Now we will mention some tajweed rules, important ones in these two verses, and together with Fawad, brothers and sisters, we'll practice the recitation, and we will ask you as well to practice. Ready, Fawad?
Yes.
Wallahu. The first rule we mentioned today is about the pronunciation of the word Allah, and also the word Allahumma. So they are pronounced the same, and they have the same rule. So can you explain it, Fawad? How? When can I? Because, look, I'm reading these two different words. Wallahu bismillahi. The word Allah is pronounced differently in two ways.
Yes.
So can you tell us the rule when to pronounce it with A sound, when to pronounce it with A sound?
So before you pronounce the word Allah, the word before it was ending in a kasra. In that situation, the word Allah is pronounced lightly. But the letter which is most affected in that word is Lam.
Lam, all right. The word, the letter Lam. So you say that if there is a kasra sound or a kasra harakat, right before the word Allah, the last harakat before the word Allah preceded, the word Allah will be pronounced?
Lightly.
Bismillah. Ah, the letter Mim has a kasra. Bismillah. So, how can I read it with A sound?
So, if there's a fatha or a dhamma.
Instead of kasra.
Yeah, instead of kasra, exactly.
So, you pronounce it with a?
Heavy sound.
Heavy sound. So, like what? Wa. Wa has a fatha. Wallahu. If it was a kasra, willahi. Right? Wallahu. So, good job. Thank you. Yuridu an yatuba. Do we have a rule here? Anything to mention? An yatuba? We got a nun sakin.
Yes.
You wanted to say the rules.
Yeah, so there are four rules for nun sakin and tanween. Idgham, ikhfa, idhar, and iqlab.
Yeah.
There are four groups of letters for each one. So yeah is in the group of yarmalun letters which belong to the
idgham rule.
Idgham.
Merging.
Yeah, merging.
How do you merge?
So you create a double ya sound.
All right.
Instead of double noon.
Noon is kind of omitted.
Yeah, kind of.
The A is joined with the Ya.
Yeah, so.
How do you read it?
Ayyatuba.
Ahsant, mashallah. Ayyatuba. Do we have to prolong the sound as well?
Yes.
Two beats. And a nasal sound also, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Wallahu yuridu ayyatuba alaykum. Can you read it once?
وَاللَّهُ يُرِيدُ أَن يَتُوبَ عَلَيْكُمْ
أَحْسَنْتُمْ عَلَيْكُمْ مَا شَاءَ اللَّهُ وَيُرِيدُ الَّذِينَ يَتَّبِعُونَ الشَّهَوَاتِ Look at the wow. There is a dagger alif, or baby, or a small alif. That changes the sound to an sound. شَهَوَاتِ Like a longer sound. Good job. Antamilu. Why did I pronounce it? I didn't pronounce the noon sound correctly.
Yeah, because ta is from the rest of the letters. It's in the, like, there are three groups of letters that have specific letters. The letters other than these letters are categorized in the rule ikhfa. So any letter which is under the rule of ikhfa that comes after nun sakin or tanween, you hide the sound.
You hide the sound of tanween or nun sakin.
Yes.
Good job. So instead of pronouncing it like an tamilu, I should hide the sound of nun. An tamilu.
Yes.
Right? Okay. An tamilu maylan azima. So here is as well a tanween. Why I didn't do it? Maylan azima.
Yeah, because ayn is a throat letter. And throat letters belong to the group
Idhar. So it means no changes.
Yeah, no
changes. So can you tell us what are the throat letters? There are six throat letters, yes? Let's review them.
Ayn.
Hamza.
Hamza.
Ha. Ha. Kha. Aynan.
Ghain.
Ghain. If one of these six letters comes right after the Tanween or Nun Sakin, do not change the sound of tanween or nun sakin. Read it the same as it is. Maylan azima. Not mayla azima or maylan azima. Nothing. No changes. Good job. So, aziman. There is a tanween. In the rules of stopping, how to stop at the end of words, tanween fatha will be changed to?
Alif mad.
Alif mad. How do you say? Aziman.
Azima.
Azima. Thank you so much. So you read it this way. Antamilu maylan azima.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Next ayah. Yuridullahu. The same pronunciation with Allah. Heavily. Yes. Ayyukhafifa. Like what?
Ayyatuba.
Ayyukhafifa. Kha has a heavy sound. Ankum. Here. I hit the sound of like noon. Why?
Yeah, because
kaf
is from the rest of the letter.
Ah, the same as antamilu, the ta. Yes.
Yes.
So ankum, I hide the sound of noon. Wa khuliqa, qa has a heavy sound. Al insan, khuliqa al insan. Noon sakin plus sin. That's as well from the rest of the letters. Yes. I should hide the sound or no?
You should hide it.
Hide the sound. How do you read it? Khuliqal.
Khuliqal insan.
Insan. Good job. Ta'ifan again will be changed to ta'ifa. Right? Wa khuliqal insanu ta'ifa. That's all about the tajweed rules. Ready to recite together?
Yes.
Okay, listen and repeat. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والله يريد أن يتوب عليكم والله يريد أن يتوب عليكم ويريد الذين يتبعون الشهوات أن تميلوا ميلا عظيما ويريد الذين يتبعون الشهوات أن تميلوا ميلا عظيما يريد الله أن يخفف عنكم يريد الله أن يخفف عنكم وخلق الإنسان ضعيفا وخلق الإنسان ضعيفا صدق الله العلي العظيم. أحسنتم ما شاء الله. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters. We hope inshallah you have learned this. And this session was beneficial for you. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks, Fawad, for being with us and practicing with us today. Inshallah, next session will continue with Surah An-Nisa. Thanks to Arab English Radio. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for being with us. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.